It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Coming up on the Midday Report, a new restaurant and eating place beer and wine license is available in Kodiak. Plus, weather could be getting warmer. That might not be good for Alaska's coastal communities. Plus, the Alaska legislature is in its last few days, and they are trying to wrap everything up.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump says he will hold off on a planned military attack on Iran that he previously scheduled for tomorrow. He says leaders from Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE asked him to hold off because they believe a deal will be reached between the U.S. and Iran. Here's NPR's Deepa Shivaram.
Trump posted on social media Sunday a warning to Iran that the clock was ticking and they better move fast or, quote, there won't be anything left of them. Now, though, Trump says there won't be a scheduled attack on Iran tomorrow, but he has informed military leaders to prepare to move forward with an attack, in his words, on a moment's notice if a deal isn't reached. Trump continues to be emphatic that any deal reached will ensure Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. The war with Iran has lasted weeks longer than Trump had originally predicted, and it's damaging Trump's approval ratings, even in his own party. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, The White House.
A person from the United States has tested positive for Ebola in connection with the latest outbreak in Central Africa, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Kritika Kupali is an infectious disease physician with experience in Ebola outbreak response.
We know that the first cases reported at the end of last week, and as of today, there have been reports of over 300 suspected cases and 88 deaths in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Uganda has also reported 2 confirmed cases and 1 death.
Kupali speaking with NPR's Here and Now. The Supreme Court has avoided taking up another major legal fight over the Federal Voting Rights Act. NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports the move comes after the court's conservative supermajority weakened the law's protections against racial discrimination in redistricting.
For decades, what's known as the Voting Rights Act Section 2 has been mainly enforced as a result of lawsuits brought by voters and advocacy groups. They've challenged hundreds of maps of voting districts and other election-related procedures with claims that they discriminate against voters of color. But in redistricting cases out of Mississippi and North Dakota, Republican officials have raised a novel argument. They argue that under Section 2, private groups and individuals do not have a right to sue. Only the U.S. Attorney General does. The Supreme Court, however, has decided not to take up that legal question for now. Instead, it's ordering lower courts to reconsider Mississippi and North Dakota's legislative districts in light of last month's ruling that put new limits on Voting Rights Act protections against racial discrimination. Anzi Luong, NPR News.
A California advisory jury has unanimously voted to dismiss all of tech mogul Elon Musk's claims against the man he helped launch OpenAI. Musk had argued that Sam Altman and others violated their duty to the artificial intelligence company's nonprofit mission and unjustly enriched themselves by building a for-profit company on top of it. However, the jury found the statute of limitations for making such a claim of breach had expired. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. For the second time in recent months, one of the 4 licenses for restaurants to serve beer and wine in Kodiak has become available. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
The state's Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, or AMCO, notified Kodiak's municipalities on Thursday that it's taking applications for the local restaurant or eating place license. It was previously held by Sizzler Burger and Peking Restaurant, which has been closed for several years. According to Alex Vrabeck, a spokesperson for AMCO, the license expired on March 5th. Vrabeck says the application process for it opened only after a noticing requirement was satisfied and various regulatory reviews were completed. She says the application period closes 30 days after AMCO receives the first application for the license based on state regulations. This is the second of Kodiak's four total restaurant or eating place licenses to become available in recent months. The first was held by a second floor restaurant. It expired before the end of 2025. There was only one application for that license from the Nuniak restaurant. Longtime Kodiak restaurateur Suk Si-yun owns the two restaurants with the expired licenses. Both Second Floor and Sizzler Burger Peking restaurants were inactive for several years. KMXC attempted to reach Yun for comment via email and phone, but received no response. After the application period closes for this latest license, and the Kodiak City Council and Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will have opportunities to review and protest any applicants. The State Alcoholic Beverage Control Board makes the final decision on who gets these restaurant or eating place licenses. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Marine heat waves have become increasingly commonplace in Alaska since 2014. According to oceanographers, a series of different factors could make this summer especially warm. As KMXT's Catherine Irving reports, that would be bad news for marine ecosystems, fisheries, and coastal communities.
Marine heat waves can wreak all sorts of havoc in Alaska. Last year, a marine heat wave in the North Pacific Ocean fueled Typhoon Halong, which devastated Alaskan communities. This summer, there could be an extra hiccup. A strong El Nino event is likely, according to the World Meteorological Organization, which could make the effects of a heat wave even worse. El Nino events happen as a result of slower trade winds along the equator, which slows down the upwelling of cold water from deep in the ocean and causes overall warmer water conditions. Here's Alaska Fisheries Science Center Director Bob Foy speaking about it during a commercial fisheries trade show in Kodiak last month.
We're expecting a massive El Nino this year, and it is supposed to be larger than usual. It's going to make its way to Alaska. We'll probably see effects of it this summer.
Marine heat waves happen when the temperature of the ocean is 4 to 5 degrees higher than the baseline average for that area. According to research from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska have been generally trending upwards over the past 50 years. But marine heat waves across the Pacific have hit even higher temperatures and have become more frequent since the mid-2010s.
Recent ones have elevated temperatures up to 8 degrees Fahrenheit over normal.
Rick Steiner is a former University of Alaska professor and current marine conservation biologist with his consulting business called Oasis Earth. He says that the combination of warming and increasing marine heat waves is worrying oceanographers.
There's a fear now in the physical oceanographic community that all of these ocean temperature elevation phenomena will eventually combine into a permanently warmer ocean system. So the shorter-term impacts will become permanent.
He says that because the ocean is normally so stable in temperature, even 1 degree of difference can have big impacts, especially on the cold-tolerant species that live in Alaska, like Pacific cod and snow crab. According to NOAA data, there has been a marine heat wave impacting the west coast of the lower 48 since the end of last year, and there's been one along the Aleutian Islands at the same time. Combined, Steiner says the El Nino and marine heat wave could create very dangerous conditions in Alaska waters in the coming months.
Unfortunately, every one of these marine ocean heat phenomenon amplifies each other. No one can predict with any degree of certainty that all of that will happen this summer in Alaska, but it's a possibility, and I believe looking at the trends and trajectories over the last few months, it's a probability.
The blob, which was a massive warming event that decimated sea life during the mid-2010s, also happened during a combined El Nino event and marine heat wave. Steiner says it's important that Alaskans keep an eye out for unusual things that are typically caused by marine heat waves, like dead seabirds or fish along the shore and emaciated marine mammals, and report any sightings to Fish and Game or NOAA. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
The Alaska legislature wants the state's development agency to finance new apartment complexes and other multifamily housing. House Bill 184 passed the Senate in a 17-3 vote on Friday morning after clearing the House in February. It gives the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or AIDA, special permission to finance what the bill calls, quote, workforce housing facilities of three or more units, close quote. Senator Forrest Dunbar, an Anchorage Democrat, says it's an effort to address a problem local governments and businesses have raised to lawmakers repeatedly, the high cost of housing in Alaska.
There are relatively few levers that the state government can pull to spur housing construction and to deal with housing affordability. This is one of those levers that's not in the hands of the local government, but in our hands.
Builders and developers said during committee hearings that financing backed by AIDA in partnership with local banks would fill an urgent need holding back new housing projects. But during committee meetings on the bill, AIDA told lawmakers that the agency believed it already had the power to build workforce housing, and as of mid-April, the agency said it didn't have any pending applications for multifamily housing projects. The bill passed with all members of the House and Senate's bipartisan majority coalitions in support, plus a handful of minority Republicans. Senator Robert Yount, a Wasilla Republican and a home builder, supported the bill.
I think in the long run, whatever it takes to make housing more affordable for Alaskans, I'm going to support, and so I'll be a yes on the bill.
Opponents in the House said they were concerned adding housing to AIDA's portfolio would divert resources from the agency's other priorities, including resource development. Federal wildland firefighters have begun burning vegetation in military training areas around the interior to reduce the chances of wildfires on those ranges this summer. U.S. Wildlife Fire Service spokesperson Beth Ipson says the agency conducted its first prescribed burn on the Donnelly Training Area near Fort Greeley.
We ignited it on Saturday, and we estimated that it treated about 25,000 acres.
Ipson says strong southerly winds that kicked up on Saturday quickly stoked the fire and blew it into grasslands around a part of the training area. The wind enabled the fire service to reduce vegetation and other fuels there, and the wind direction kept the smoke from drifting east to Fort Greeley and Delta Junction.
And that's what we try to do. We try to take advantage of favorable wind so we don't have any smoke impacts to the communities.
Aerial observations conducted earlier this week showed that the fire had almost completely petered out, she said, except for one spot in the burned over area.
There's been some residual smoke in the southwest corner, but that northern edge and the eastern edge are cold. Haven't been showing any kind of smoke, any kind of activity.
Ipson says the Wildland Fire Service, formerly known as the Alaska Fire Service, tries to conduct as many prescribed burns as possible on the training areas early on in the spring. That helps reduce the chances of bigger fires later in the season when the agency may have personnel and equipment working on other high-priority fires.
And as the summer heats up, things get even drier, and then you have that black spruce that enters into the equation, and there's other fires pulling resources elsewhere.
She says if the weather holds, the fire service plans to begin prescribed burning on the Yukon training area east of Fort Wainwright. A case against a former Juneau chiropractor who has been accused of assaulting more than a dozen women under the guise of medical care may continue into another year. At a hearing last week, the defense attorney said he would not be ready to go to trial until 2027. KTOO's Yvonne Crumrie has this report.
Jeffrey Foltz went on trial last year, more than 4 years after he was arrested for alleged assault while he was employed at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. The alleged abuse happened from 2014 to 2020. The trial lasted 6 weeks and ended in two counts not guilty and a deadlocked jury on a dozen other counts. The judge in this case later dismissed one more charge. And that means 11 counts of assault remain, which Foltz can be tried for again. But the court hasn't scheduled a new trial yet. The court assigned Foltz a public defender in October, Juneau's Nico Ambrose. Ambrose said in court Wednesday that the last 7 months haven't been enough time to prepare for trial. Stacking his table in the courtroom with binders and boxes of paper, he said he likely won't be ready until 2027.
It's hard to kind of envision what I'm talking about. if I'm just saying it, but I brought over all of this material to kind of show this is what I mean. This is not, and this is not everything.
Prosecutor Kristen Tendy argued that the state has to do the same amount of work as the defense. She says she came into the case shortly before the first trial and is still urging to set a trial date. Here's Tendy, who participated in the hearing remotely.
And the defendant is entitled to representation. He is entitled to competent representation, and he is not entitled to the absolute perfect epitome of the greatest attorney that ever existed. He is entitled to the same representation that every other defendant is entitled to.
Tendy asked for a trial date to be set.
The state will be ready. This cannot keep going. At this point, Your Honor needs to set a trial date. We need to move forward.
Ambrose said his preparations are intended to meet the ethical standards to represent Fultz to the best of his ability.
Making reasonable requests for time to go through things, file motion practice, hire experts, and litigate a case is not perfect lawyering. It's what lawyers have to do to further their ethical obligations of zealous advocacy and effective representation.
Ambrose asked to meet next in October. Judge Larry Wolford weighed the two sides' opposing requests. He referenced an Alaska Supreme Court ruling that placed limits on further delays in cases from before 2022, like this one. According to the ruling, courts had a limited time to extend cases unless, quote, extraordinary circumstances exist and that delay is indispensable to the interest of justice.
I think I have said several times in the past that in some ways this case is its own extraordinary circumstance.
Wolford pointed to the amount of evidence in the case.
It is a difficult balance to strike. But as I said, I'm not willing to kick this down the road until October.
Instead, the judge chose a compromise and set the next hearing for July. It's scheduled for July 15th at the Diamond Courthouse in Juneau. And aside from timing, another issue is still outstanding. At a hearing in April, Ambrose said he was considering filing a motion to change the venue of the retrial from Juneau to Anchorage. He has not filed that motion, but said Wednesday he's still planning to. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cormery.
For most people, making it to your 80th birthday is a pretty big deal. For the World War II-era Wooden Saner Symphony, an 80th birthday is an even bigger cause for celebration. People packed the docks in Petersburg on May 13th to celebrate the storied fishing vessel and the people who have cared for it. KFSK's Taylor Heckard attended the party and has this story.
In Petersburg's North Harbor, a crowd begins to pack in near a bright white Saner. In big block letters, the name Symphony is across her bow and in script lettering above the cabin. The boat looks very good for an 80-year-old.
Thank you for coming to help us celebrate the 80 years of this beautiful, classic Saner and longliner and crabber and shrimper, the Symphony.
Sue Paulson begins the festivities. She's the daughter of the first owner of the Symphony, Gordon Jensen. The boat has only had four captains in her lifetime. Each captain has been Norwegian-American, which meant it was fitting to celebrate the ship's birthday during Petersburg's annual Little Norway Festival.
In Norway, there are two very important birthdays, 50 and 80. So we had to do 80 because I don't think I'm going to be here for 100.
Her father commissioned the Symphony from a shipyard in Ballard, Washington in 1946. When the Symphony was completed, she cost $39,000. She was the largest boat in Petersburg's fleet at the time. Local historian Don Nelson was in Petersburg when the Symphony arrived.
I was standing on a public dock with everybody else in town. It was greatly expected, a brand new boat, the flagship of the fleet.
Nelson says this was a time before Alaska's ferry system, so basketball teams would travel by fishing boat to get to their competitions. He says he has fond memories traveling between communities on the Symphony. And he also remembers how well she fished.
So I spent a lot of time on the Symphony, but mainly waiting for that ship to come in with its absolutely unbelievable 58,000 pounds every trip.
Jensen eventually sold the Symphony to Ed Fuglog, who later sold it to Audie Mathiesen. It's been in the Mathiesen family for over 50 years. Lenore Mathiesen is Audie's daughter and remembers when he first bought the boat.
We thought she was huge. when we first walked in the galley, and my dad showed me the boat, and we thought it was such a big boat. And now it's one of the, you know, it's a smaller boat for the fleet. So, but we still love her.
Sigma Thiessen is one of Audie's sons. He says it takes a significant amount of work to keep a wooden boat like that sailing.
Southeast Alaska is not conducive to long-lasting wood endeavors. Nature is pretty good at reclamation here. It takes near constant oversight, sanding, painting, oiling, machine work, modernizing, shipyard projects. The list is long.
Wayne Mathiesen, also Audie's son, is the current captain of the Symphony. He's been fishing since he was a kid and has been captain for over 30 years. Wayne says it's a lot easier to go with a fiberglass or aluminum boat these days, but he's committed to keeping the Symphony in good working order. The boat is hauled out multiple times a year to keep it in good shape.
But it's doable. Every piece can be replaced. It's a giant puzzle with many pieces. It's a challenge, but challenge accepted.
The boat has been the Mathiesen family's labor of love for a long time, and it's still out fishing. Right now, his crew are entirely family members. They just returned from long lining for halibut.
It's been an honor to take over for my dad and the other two owners, Gordon and Ed, who are great men. Still have their handprints on the steering wheel, which will remain unfinished as long as I'm around.
The party ended, as all good birthday parties do, with lots of cake and singing. Local musician Alec McMurrin adapted an original song to fit the occasion.
Now this here boat was built to fish from the seven seas to the Amazon. It fished and hauled about everything from halibut to herring spawn.
In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
This boat's been round for 80 years. It's sure to sail for 80 more. With her fine lines and fine captain too, she's sure a vessel to adore.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday, the 18th day of May. It is the year 2026. The sun rose today at 5:40. It will set again at 10:33, giving us 16 hours and 53 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 77 degrees set in 2014, and a record low was 28 set in 1966. It is currently 41 degrees in Kodiak. There's a light rain falling. A foggy mist has been clinging tenaciously to the hills. Out at the airport, they report completely calm winds, and they are down to 3 miles of visibility. Look for partly sunny skies this afternoon at some point, although they are calling for scattered showers until 4 p.m. High temperature near 48 today, southwest winds to 10. Showers are expected early tonight. Low around 42 tonight, southeast winds to 20, gusting to 30. And for tomorrow, look for mostly sunny skies, although with some isolated showers, especially in the morning and late afternoon. Southwest winds 5 or 10. And look for partly sunny skies on Wednesday, rain in the morning on Thursday, just a chance of showers with partly sunny skies on Friday. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 4:32 this afternoon and be 7.3 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:39 p.m. of 2.2 feet. And be on the lookout for a very low tide tomorrow morning. That will happen at 10:46 tomorrow morning and be minus 2.2 feet here on the east side, a significant low tide. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:49 this afternoon and be 13.1 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:24 p.m. of 3.1 feet. And your very low tide in Larsen Bay will happen at 11:14 a.m. and be minus 3.6 feet. Your moon is presently 5.5% and getting larger. Mariners, be aware we have a small craft advisory through Tuesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. South 20 becoming southeast 30 tonight. 8-foot seas building to 10 feet tonight. Southwest 20 tomorrow with 9-foot seas. They are calling for southwest 25 for Wednesday, 8-foot seas. Southwest 30 on Thursday with seas at 11 feet. And they're calling for 11-foot seas on Friday as well. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight with south winds to 20 knots and 5-foot seas today in the Shelikof. For tonight, east 25 and 6-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southeast 20 seas at 5 feet. For Wednesday through Thursday, south 25 and 5-foot seas in the Shelikof. Just outside of the city of Kodiak and Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory tonight with south winds to 20 knots, becoming south 25 tonight. 4-foot seas building all the way up to 8 feet tonight in Chiniak Bay. For tomorrow, southwest 15, seas coming down to 2 feet. The Airport Advisory Board will be holding a meeting on Wednesday. That meeting will begin at 3:30 p.m. in the City Conference Room. For additional information, call Public Works at 907-486-8060. This meeting is open to the public and will be web-streamed as well. The link for the web-streaming and the meeting packet are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And if you have any further questions, contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636. The Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a work session on Wednesday in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's conference room at 6 p.m. Also on Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Don't forget, assembly meetings and Planning and Zoning Commission meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube channel, and all borough facilities and offices will be closed on Monday, May 25th, in observance of Memorial Day. There is a newborn feeding class coming up this Wednesday. That's happening 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library, taught by an international board certified lactation consultant. This free, in-person, jam-packed, interactive workshop is designed for all families expecting babies. And again, that is 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library on Wednesday. If you need more information on that, register online, too, at kodiakkindness.org. The library will be closed, or is just opening up right now. They have been closed for staff training. Today at 1 p.m. is the Bridge Club at the Kodiak Public Library, and tomorrow at 6 p.m. is the Writers Club. That's for those wanting to learn the process of writing and to share ideas. For ages 16 and older, again, that's 6 p.m. tomorrow at the Kodiak Public Library. And don't forget about the big book sale that's happening during Crab Fest Friday and Saturday at the Historic Barn. And there's $5 a bag deals on books at the book sale coming up on Friday and Saturday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the Midday Report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.